Blog Talk Radio.
California, one of the one of my favorite revolutionary hip hop groups, Boost and Pam the Funkstress, and I am Solomon, and this is Your World News, and I'm glad we had the crew to kick us off because I think that's the most appropriate song to kick off the show today. Ride the fence. You can't ride the fence. Can't ride the fence on this show. You can't ride the fence. And Peter, the co-host of this program, will be joining us in a minute or two. He's not riding the fence either. So we make no bones about it. This is news and critical analysis from a very, 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 very far, far left perspective, and from a perspective that seldom gets any kind of air, any kind of run on the fraudulent corporate news that is riddled throughout the United States of America. And that is going to be a theme throughout this show. As you know, if you're tuned in, you see the ad line for our show today: false media deconstructing the corporate media in America. We're gonna delve into the corporate media, looking at some of its roots, looking at some of the major laws that have been enacted that have paved the way for the corporate media to get stronger and to really continue to play a role in obfuscating the masses of the American hoi polloi and continuing obviously to create the to continue to sustain the establish the establishment and the status quo that that we have today, where we don't have we have a very small engaged populace. I would even call it, I would not even call it a critical mass at this point, because when we look outside of U.S. borders and look at other countries and how the critical mass is there, really, you know, whether it's you know, so-called austerity measures that are being imposed upon them or other things. I mean, for goodness sake, look at what's going on in Tunisia. Look what's going on in Egypt. By you know, at the folks are starting to you know, to protest and demand a better government than the oppressive regime that they've seen the last three decades in Egypt under Mubarak, which happens to be, and this is kind of a great point, because you know, Mubarak has long been a U.S. ally and continues to be a strong U.S. ally. I mean, he's been in the White House under this administration as well as the previous administration and that before that and that before that, despite the fact that he is one of the most repressive, authoritarian dictators on the planet today. But you're not even gonna hear that little tidbit on anywhere on MSNBC, CNN, ABC. I mean, do I really need to say even mention the right wing white nationalist Fox News? So, anyways, we're gonna get into a range of things. We're gonna get into giving our perspective, our rebuttal, since you know, whenever they have the State of the Union, they always have the either the Democratic response or the Republican response, depending on who's in power. But they never have, like, you know, a third party response. You know, even if it's an established third party political party, such as the Green Party, or I mean, and even for that matter, even if it's somebody from the Libertarian Party or something like that, they don't ever have a national response. And so when we look at the State of the Union, we're going to delve into that and what was missed and you know, reading between the lines and kind of giving our response, a poor people's response, a response that that has some kind of critical analysis from the point of view or perspective of the radical left that touches on some of the things that were ignored dealing with people of color throughout America, you know, whether it's unemployment, mass incarceration. I mean, none of those things were targeted, but it's not a surprise. But we're going to get into that today. So without further ado, I want to bring on Peter, who's joining us once again from the Mississippi of the West, the Southwest, and that's none other than the rotten, putrid state of Arizona. Peter, how are you doing in hell?
Well, man, every day is a new trial out here. It's definitely the new Mississippi of Babylon, and you know, I'm just doing what I can to not lose my mind out here, bro. And you know, if nothing else, it's instructive to kind of be behind enemy lines, as it were. But I'm hanging in there, bro, staying strong in the struggle, and ready to do some serious deconstruction of American corporate media and take a critical look, and like you said, a poor people's look, a non-delusional perspective at the so-called State of the Union, or what I call the misstatement of the Union, because obviously the political elite they have no possible way of making any kind of accurate assessment of the union of the United States, of our society, as we see it, those of us on the underside see it, those of us who live in reality see it. So we need to definitely critique that. And in light of the fact that the media is controlled by wealthy corporations, it's important that we deconstruct the media. You know, our topic for tonight is so timely, so relevant, and one that we need to take very seriously. And I hope our listeners can grasp the import and the gravity of how the role that the media plays in our society, and our critique on that tonight. So so let's do it, bro. And oh, the coup, man. I love the coup. I'm glad you put the coup on, man. So that brought a smile to my face.
All right, well, we're gonna hear much more of the coup. It got them queued up and ready to go, man. You know, we can say this show is dedicated to progressive revolutionary hip hop groups, wherever they may be found. You know, whether it's in the Oakland and the Bay Area, or in Venezuela, man, we're gonna be using the coup as an example today. As we always play revolutionary, you know, resistance oriented hip hop music, but today we're gonna be playing a nice, healthy diet of the coup. So,
right.
With that being said, Peter, you know, some folks might ask, you know, why are we focusing on the media? And you know, sometimes I guess, you know, going back to one of those classic Alfred Hitchcock episodes. I mean, I don't know if people, you know, obviously I wasn't alive when they were first aired, but I definitely recall watching, you know, old Alfred Hitchcock Presents when I was just a youngster. And one of my favorite episodes I can distinctly remember is the one where the wife, she murdered her husband, and she bludgeoned him to death with a lamb, like this huge frozen lamb shank. And so the detectives came over, and they were asking questions and this, that, and the other. And so they were, you know, looking around the house and so forth. And so she's in the kitchen, you know, baking actually the murder weapon. And so at the end of the show, I mean, she invites them to join her for dinner, you know. So they oblige, you know, readily oblige. So they sit down and they're digging into the food. The lamb shank is being cut up, this, that, and the other. And one of the detectives, and this is how it ended, one of the detectives says, "Man," he's like, "I just feel that the clue to breaking this case is right under our noses." and in classic Alfred Hitchcock style, it ends. And my point is that, folks, that, you know, if you don't really understand why we're covering the media, why it's so, and why we're deconstructing on this episode, it's the clues are right under your nose. I mean, you look outside and everything from the 77% of Americans who are living check to check, everything from rampant police brutality in the communities of color, everything from, you know, the mass expansion of this illegal war in Afghanistan and Pakistan. You know, we see the vast majority of airstrikes, actually the last many airstrikes have actually been in Waziristan, which is a province in Pakistan. And these things are much more are inextricably linked to the media, because these things are seldom discussed in any kind of depth or critical analysis or deference or reverence to the victims of these wars, to the victims of rampant and institutional police brutality by way of institutional racism. I mean, a range of things, and this, you know, ties into the fact that, you know, in America we see where African Americans make roughly about 13% of the population, but people of African descent, blacks in America, make up only 0.6% of all full power broadcast television stations in terms of ownership. They, you know, and black folks make up less than 4% of all ownership of U.S. radio stations. And when you throw all people of color into the fray, they make up, you know, less than 4% of ownership for all TV stations and less than 8% of ownership for all radio stations. So when you have that kind of mass ownership that's not even broken down to even close to population proportionality, you know, obviously you're not going to have the issues. I mean, you're not going to have the issues that are linked to institutional racism, issues that are unfortunately endemic in black and brown skin communities, not endemic to the people that live there because they brought them there, but institutional racism, you know, made sure that these issues were brought to wherever those black folks and brown folks found their ways. And so you're just simply not going to have that kind of perspective. And so we're going to get into a range of those things, you know, Peter, and that, you know, and I just think that, it, you know, if people understood a little bit more, were a little bit more media literate, it would allow them to deconstruct many, many dominant narratives that are fed to them. And you know, we talked about how children need to know how to deconstruct dominant narratives, Peter. But quite frankly, adults in this age that we're living in right now need to understand how to deconstruct dominant narratives, because ownership of media is continually being gobbled up more and more by large corporations. And we see this oligopoly that is controlling the vast array. So you see, you know, where, for instance, soon it's going to be affecting our cell phones. Those of us that have those smartphones, this, that, we can get internet. With this new Comcast merger, you're going to see them trying to get into the whole arena. But, in terms of controlling the content that you can get through your smartphone, whether it may be Hulu or Netflix or what have you, they're going to be, you know, that's coming down the pike. They're going to be controlling that. And so we're going to talk about the recent merger of Comcast gobbling up NBC Universal, and talking about obviously the news corporations and the big four in this country that control more than, you know, 87% of all the media that people consume. And that's actually a liberal estimate. That's actually a fairly liberal, I mean, not liberal, but that's a very conservative estimate. It's probably a few percentage points higher than that. So we're going to get into that, because when you have that kind of selective ownership of media concentrated in a few hands, you're going to see a tremendous filtering of news and information and perspectives not making their way into the minds and the thoughts, you know, of a great many Americans, whether they may be brown, black, white, you know, so forth and so forth. So, I don't know what your thoughts are, Peter, in terms of the media and the importance to not just understand the media, but then to create a growing movement of locally generated media throughout the country. This show that we have here, we have a decent listenership, and you may be listening live, you may be listening in an archive, sometime in June of 2011, we don't know, but we're just a pittance compared to the corporate media. We're no kind of formidable foe for the corporate media. The internet is a great tool for information, but in terms of media, you cannot even compare. You can't compare, you know, Truth Out or Truth Dig or some of the other progressive op-ed news, Daily Censor. You can't even Black Agenda Report. You can't compare that to the corporate media. There are tools to reach folks, and it's our job to get those websites out there more and more, like Black Agenda Report. But quite frankly, it's not any kind of competition for the corporate media. And it's important that there is localism, because that's tied into the Telecom Act, I mean, or the Communications Act of 1934, when the FCC was created. When the FCC was created, it was created, and those licenses were given out to by the government to the likes of NBC. It was the strings that were attached were meant that you had to provide some localism. You had to provide some localism, and that localism, quite frankly, is not followed up. You know, these licenses that they all own to this day, they're paid by our tax dollars. They're paid with our U.S. tax dollars. The infrastructure is covered by their corporate money, but the licenses that are, you know, the spectrum and the airwaves that are doled out to these telecom companies, it's paid for by our tax dollars. And the catch is that they're supposed to provide some kind of localism as a part of the public service in terms of getting those licenses. And Peter, they fail miserably. It's not even that they fail. They don't try. It's not, you know, failure is like I'm trying. They just continue to spit in the face of all of us, not even the FCC, because the FCC is in bed with them. And Peter, you know, because we have so much ground to cover, but Peter, there was only one dissenting voice when it came to this merger and these new rules that were doled out. But with this new merger of Comcast and NBC Universal, Peter, the only dissenting voice was Michael Copps. He was the only dissenting voice. So even with Julius Jankowski, who was appointed by Barack Obama, and the fact that the Democrats now control, they have three of the five votes in the FCC. Four of them, you know, two Republicans and two Democrats voted the way of this merger. So what the hell does even matter? You know what I'm saying? What the hell? And Obama appointed this guy, and communications and net neutrality was one of the cornerstones that Obama built his campaign on, and where he said he's going to follow through and make sure that net neutrality is on the docket, this and the other, and he's backed off away from it a million miles away, the same way he backed off of single payer health care since 2005, since 2006, the more corporate money that got in there. My point is, it's the corporate money that has made all the difference in terms of these FCC commissioners voting the way they do. So I don't know if you have some thoughts, Peter, on just the media in general.
Absolutely. You have a great deal of thoughts on the media, because it's so important. It's so ubiquitous. And so impactful in our culture on all of us. You know, none of us. Maybe unless we live in an Amish community, but if that's the case, you're not listening to our show. But as far as our listeners and the political process in this country, we are all impacted by corporate media in one way, shape, or another, whether we recognize it or not. And you know, perhaps that's one of the reasons why it's not a constant topic of conversation, is because it's always there. It's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the oxygen in our air. It's just there. So, you know, we don't notice it. We don't recognize it. We don't talk about it because of it's kind of ever present, you know, but it's so important, and we need to understand the reality behind the appearance of things that seem, you know, innocuous or even neutral, you know, like television shows and like movies and the radio and news papers and news magazines and things like that, because they all have an agenda. They all have a purpose behind their appearance. And, you know, especially now in this climate with the new regulations and laws regarding, you know, some of the ones that you just talked about, and after Reagan eliminated the what was the name of that equal time or
Oh, Fair Doctrine. The fair doctrine.
Yeah, the fairness doctrine.
Fairness.
You know, after he eliminated that, you know, that has heavily influenced, you know, to media and the way, especially news organizations, so-called news, we call it infotainment or propaganda organizations, go about their business, in, you know, in this country. And all of us as consumers of media need to understand what it's all about. And, you know, there are some great analysts and critics of American media. And, you know, Noam Chomsky is one, and Stuart and Elizabeth Ewan are a couple of scholars that do a lot of great research. But, you know, we've talked about hip hop as a media venue, you know, and it really is.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, if we look at the historical continuity of hip hop, you know, to in African American culture and its connection to African indigenous cultures, you know, the griot and the sage in African cultures, you know, were the purveyors of wisdom and knowledge and tradition, and information, you know, and that oral tradition. And so, you know, the best of what hip hop has to offer. Obviously, I'm not talking about, you know, the corporate hip hop or what Lil Wayne or 50 Cent had to say, but, you know, conscientious hip hoppers, you know, like Boots Riley, in the coup, and so many others. You know, there's, you know, they communicate in important ways, and even though they're not recognized necessarily as media pundits, they communicate to us in significant, important ways, and that's why it's important that we recognize that voice in the mix as well. I mean, even Boots Riley, you know, who we heard from at the top of the show, in another one of probably my favorite tune by the coup called "Dig It." One of the part of a line in that tune, he says, "Anesthesia provided by your local TV station." You know, and if we just stop and think about that line for a minute, you know, I mean, he's making a insightful analysis about you know, the role of television, particularly in lower income America. You know, that we sit down in front of the TV and get anesthetized. You know, and anesthetized does what? You know, it allows us to suffer through painful things without being consciously aware of the pain. You know, and Chuck D, you know, going back a few years, in the tune "Letter to the New York Post," you know, he said the New York Post, you know, his critique of a major media outlet says it costs 75 cents at your newsstand, but makes no goddamn sense anywhere. Another one of my favorite artists, Michael Franti, I'm a Reagan bus too, you know, he's got a tune called "Hey World," subtitle "Remote Control," and the refrain is, "You got to put up a fight, you got to let go of remote control," you know, another critique of television. And so, you know, hip hop is not only a form of media in and of itself, but also at times with conscientious rappers is a critique of media that is just as insightful and just as powerful, and in many ways more powerful than guys like Noam Chomsky, you know, and other scholars, because, you know, they will reach a segment of the population that Noam Chomsky may not. So, you know, we need to look at media critically. We need to look at it as the force that it is in our culture, you know, that it shapes the reality. And, you know, and that's what makes it so crucial, is that media shapes our reality. And as long as we have a conscious understanding of that, we can have a critical filter through which to receive the images and everything else that is conveyed, the information and ideas that's conveyed through media. But when we don't understand that and we don't have a conscious filter or a conscious perspective on media, then that's the danger that is so real, that media will then shape the ideas and shape the reality itself for us, instead of us doing it through critical reflection and thoughtful conversation and dialogue, the media makes it for us, you know, and we know that the media, the reality that the media creates is not, is a warped reality. You know, like Marx said, the ideas, the prevailing ideas of a capitalist society are the ideas of the ruling class, and those ideas and that reality is conveyed through the media in its various forms. So, you know, it's a super important issue, you know, and something that we've all got to take seriously, whether or not we listen to a Noam Chomsky or a Boots Riley. You know, we've got to listen to what they both have to say, because they both have interpreted the importance of media and are making that critique and that analysis to us. So let's try to do our part tonight, you know, in making that critique and that analysis.
Right, definitely. And, you know, with that being said, I want to go to, you know, one of those progressive outlets that we wholeheartedly endorse on Your World News, and that's Black and Gender Report with I'm gonna call him, you know, Dr. Glenn Ford, because he has plenty of PhD knowledge. He doesn't need some white institution to validate his intelligence, you know. So I'm gonna call him Dr. Glenn Ford. I gave him an honorary doctor from the University of Your World News, but you know, Glenn Ford and his colleagues, you know, Margaret Kimberly and Bruce Dixon and Jared Ball, do a great job disseminating some really, really critical information from a Black left perspective, and that, you know, that's critical these days, because you know, skin color has really confused a lot of people. And has confused a whole lot of Black folks in 2008, you know, when they just kind of blindly got behind Obama. And I can understand the fervor, but it shows you how confusing skin color is even to this day, because, you know, still the Black masses still support this guy, despite the fact that he has disrespected the Black community just by pure ignorance, you know, since he's been in office, and even before. I mean, you know, even before he was in office. I mean, he, you know, I was just, you know, telling somebody the other day, and mentioned it in a piece I wrote, that, you know, in April of 2008, you know, when, or actually it was later than that, but it was, I can't remember, was it April of 2008, but referring to the verdict that was, yeah, it was April of 2008, when they handed down the verdict of the Sean Bell murder by those NYPD cops that murdered him. It was Barack Obama, when Black folks were not rioting, they were peaceably, like, protesting, using their constitutional rights to assemble and protest, and there was no violence or anything like that. You know, they weren't burning anything down. And this guy, you know, as if he was the spokesperson of Black America, you know, said, you know, we, you know what I'm saying? Use the pronoun we need to respect the judgment of the verdict of the judge. You know, this America is a nation founded on just laws, and we need to respect the verdict by the judge, which was that amoral Judge Cooperman, who handed down that verdict, and it was just a spit in the face to the Black community. Meanwhile, even Hillary Clinton had stronger words towards what happened with Sean Bell, his murder. I mean, she issued more sympathy than did this phenotypically brown skinned man. You know, her statement was in comparison, was much stronger than Barack Obama's, and had some actual sympathy towards Sean Bell's, you know, wife and family, and even said that, you know, hope this you know, that this never happens again. So standing alone, it's not necessarily a strong statement, but juxtaposed next to Barack Obama's statement You would have thought she was Malcolm X, you know, Fannie Lou Hamer. I mean, but you know, so you know the importance of saying that Black Agenda Report is news and critical analysis from a Black perspective makes all the difference in the world. It's not just a Black perspective, because if we just said Black perspective, well, I mean, Clarence Thomas, Condoleezza Rice, you know, they're, you know, Ward Connolly, these are phenotypically Blacks, you know, Black people. These are folks of African ancestry that happen to be Black and brown. And so we can't just, these days, we can't just let that stand alone, because the politics make all the difference. If you're Black and you have the politics of a Condoleezza Rice, it makes all the difference, you know, juxtaposed next to somebody who is Black or brown skin, who has the politics of a Fannie Lou Hamer. So, you know, so we have to keep that in mind, and that's one of the great things about Black Agenda Report. And those of you guys that have never heard that before, please make sure you tune into Black Agenda Report. But I'm gonna play this clip. This is something that he put out, you know, roughly about a couple months ago, and having to do with Black bloggers in association with the White House. And I think it's timely, and I think it really is going to put a lot of things in perspective as we move forward throughout this show. So without further ado, this is Glenn Ford from Black Agenda Report.
In the words of I.F. Stone, one of the 20th century's great investigative journalists, governments lie. All governments lie. Stone's words are as true now as they were when he uttered them more than half a century ago. When the White House invited Black bloggers in for a Columbus Day meeting, they were told that they could print anything they heard in the first half of the meeting, but that they could attribute none of it to any White House spokesperson by name, while the second half of their meeting would be completely off the record. Fortunately, or perhaps by design, none of the invited bloggers were actually journalists. They hailed mostly from celebrity gossip sites like Concrete Loop and Young Black and Fabulous, from BET and Essence Magazine, from BlackSingles.com. Real journalists would have laughed those anonymous spokesperson and off-the-record requirements right out of the room. Ethical journalists only grant anonymity to sources like whistleblowers with well-founded fears of retaliation, not to police, not to mayors, not to prosecutors, not to military or civilian government officials. The only reason for these representatives of powerful institutions to speak to reporters or bloggers off the record is to lie to them, with the expectation that they will pass untraceable falsehoods onto the public as news, or in the case of Young, Black, and Fabulous, as celebrity gossip. Sure enough, cell phone video of the president dropping in to briefly address the bloggers hit the internet the very next day, prompting The Atlantic's token Black commentator, Ta-Nehisi Coates, to grouse about colored folks who didn't understand what off the record meant, as if being the covert mouthpieces of the powerful were something they really should strive to be. One of the invitees was a friend and colleague of ours, Ms. Lutitia Stills, now at jackandjillpolitics.com. Observing that the White House hadn't called Black bloggers in since the 2008 presidential campaign, Stills opined that the bloggers were being, as she put it, pimped. We think Ms. Stills was correct, but for the wrong reasons. To be pimped is to be manipulated for some underhanded and shameful purpose. Whether bloggers or journalists are shamefully used once every couple years or three times a week is a difference only in the frequency of the act, not in the roles of the players or of the played. Thus, when Kelly Goff, a Huffington Post and Loop21.com blogger, called the White House briefing a good first date, quote unquote, she was publicly signaling her willingness to be used in any way at any time by the powerful. There's a word for people who play that role, and that word is not journalist. In his long career, the great investigative reporter I.F. Stone broke scores of original stories about war, peace, and corruption. He never asked for and he never got the privileged and off-the-record access to the powerful which Ta-Nehisi Coates imagines black reporters should aspire to. The private interviews with mayors, admirals, and presidents, who would have been much too afraid of his direct and probing questions anyway. Stone got his stories the old-fashioned way, with diligent research. Black Agenda Report was, of course, not invited to the White House meeting, and that's perfectly okay with us. We understand that reporters and bloggers, too, who subsist on privileged access to the powerful in return for passing their anonymous tidbits to the public as news, that such people are being pimped, which makes them, well, you know. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Bruce Dixon. Find us on the web every Wednesday at www.blackagendareport.com.
In my era, that was Bruce Dixon, obviously, as he just said. As soon as I played the clip, I knew it was Bruce Dixon. So, my bad. But Bruce Dixon is the integral part of Black Agenda Report. And I'm just used to, because most of the radio commentaries are by Glenn. But that was Bruce Dixon, who does amazing work, amazing work as well, as they all do. And, that clip was very telling and kind of highlights the kind of perspective that we were just talking about, is that a black left perspective is allowed nowhere within the political, the mainstream political or the mainstream media sphere in America, and from the powers that be that prevent and filter those perspectives, for good reason. Of course they're very fearful of a very left leaning black political perspective anywhere, because that's when you would see the deconstruction and critical analysis of those issues that matter most to us, that reside within black communities and matter most to us, to us that are true progressives, regardless of what your color is, people that are for truth and justice, and making sure that those who are most disenfranchised receive that long-awaited justice. And so that's why those perspectives are kept far, far away. That's why Black Agenda Report is so important. And just to give folks a little bit of a historical perspective, this is the work that Peter and I are doing, the work that Black Agenda Report is doing, the work that some of the other folks that are doing in terms of media that is predominantly black independent. That work is flowing through us from our ancestors. And what I mean by that, when we look historically from the end, Peter, from the end from the start of Reconstruction to the beginning of to the beginning of the 20th century, that one can find throughout America, anywhere between 250 and 200 to 275 independent black newspapers, from the California Eagle all the way to, the Amsterdam News. I mean, there at least 250 independent black newspapers popped up throughout the United States. And so that, and you look at the time, look at the times that we're going on. I mean, that's very, very, very telling. So this is not anything new. And the reason why they did that is that out of necessity, because the white media continued to have, the white newspapers continued to have very, very racist comics about black folks, very racist-leaning news stories about black people. They didn't pick up black stories. And so, as folks started to migrate from the South up north to places like Chicago, New York, there was no kind of newspaper that really informed the black community that was, that was segregated into certain areas of those cities. And so they created these newspapers that were powerful forces, and a lot of them, you know, to look at even the power of the Black church at that time is that a lot of these newspapers, they found printing, they did their printing off of the printing presses that were found in the basements of a lot of different Black churches. And so it's important to have that historical analysis, because today it's almost like, young Black journalists that are going through these you know, so-called higher educational institutions are not pushed to start up or to help buttress and reinforce Black media that's out there right now. They're pushed towards joining the mainstream establishment, joining, white newspapers, which I'll call it. Yeah, I can say that the New York Times is a. I don't. You know what I'm saying? So people can say, oh, well, that's, you know, you're being sudden, you know, slighted. No, how can you not call it predominantly? Because the stories that they focus on and the perspectives that they focus on are overwhelmingly, predominantly from a white, either centrist to conservative perspective, and so. But they're pushed towards being in the mainstream establishment, Peter. And so, you know, it's history makes all the difference in the world. And because if not, you fall prey to these organizations and like the corporate media that oftentimes create their own revisionist, takes on history. And it happens in the halls of Congress to the media, where we just recently saw Michelle Bachmann, the nitwitted revisionist historian that masquerades as a congresswoman from Minnesota, just yesterday. I'm not talking about her speech, her rebuttal for the State of the Union, but I'm talking about Peter. And I don't know if you heard this. Which she said she was giving a speech, and she was talking about slavery. She's like, this nation, yes, there was a scourge, of slavery, and that was terrible. But if it wasn't for our founding fathers fighting, and working towards eradicating slavery, then we might not have seen it end as it did. And I'm like sitting there, and I'm like, oh my God, yo! She literally said, if it wasn't for the founding our founding fathers fighting to eliminate the scourge of slavery, because they fought and they were persistent and this, that, and the other. I mean, she literally said this. I am not making this up, folks. You know what I'm saying? And those with no history know that most of the founding fathers were slave owners themselves, going all the way to Washington, who owned, you know, 317 slaves himself, you know. So, Peter, it behooves us to Flavor Flav said, don't believe the hype. You know, it behooves us not to believe the hype and understand this is as Black Thought says, this is false media. You know, we don't need it, do we?
You're right. You know, you know, aside from the fact that Michelle Bachmann is an ignorant tool, the media, you know, will continue to prop up fools like her, and they'll let that slide. You know, I'm sure that whatever media source through which she trumpeted that nonsense bothered to correct that, you know. But and the reason is not only do they want to not put her, any of the establishment, especially the regressives, in a negative light, but that, you know, her comment, as erroneous and ignorant as it is, plays into the hand of the American narrative, you know, that the founding fathers were these almost divine, you know, these demigods, you know, that you know, that were super democratic and, you know, super moralistic and all about liberty and freedom, you know, which is largely nonsense. You know, the fact, you know, to even you're right. You know, to think about the founding fathers in their relationship to slavery. Well, they were all for it. You know, like you said, most of them owned slaves themselves. You know, and so that right there is just an indication, an example of how, you know, the media frames reality. You know, just this whole American narrative that gets generated and then pervaded through the various venues of corporate media, you know, and it paints this picture, it creates this reality that supports the dominant narrative, it supports the dominant ideas of the ruling class, and it's dangerous, you know, and there must be a dissident voice, or not a dissident voice, but a multitude of dissident voices, you know, and there's no question that your world news is one of those dissident voices, and that's why it's important for us to continue to be a dissident voice and for our listeners to continue to send this link out and let folks know about it, and also to go to Black Agenda Report. You know, and that's why the Black Agenda Report wasn't invited to the White House for that meeting of the
right.
bloggers. You know, as you know, Vox Union wasn't invited, and you know, Uhuru wasn't invited, and all these other, you know, progressive or left black venues obviously weren't invited because they're not going to kowtow to the company line, right? They're not going to kowtow to the White House agenda. They're not going to kowtow to Obama's agenda, which is, in fact, the corporate agenda, the agenda of the ruling elite. And alternative, so-called alternative media is crucial. I mean, without an alternative media, or without a variety of alternative media in this society, we would be overwhelmed with misinformation and propaganda, you know, and that gets at the heart of our critique of the corporate media, that it is largely a propaganda machine, you know, and its job is to create a certain kind of reality, you know, and if we look at, you know, you've mentioned Bernays, Ed Bernays, you've mentioned him on the show before. And his work is so important, you know, and so critical, at least in understanding what's going on. You know, not that we agree with him, but in understanding what's going on. You know, and another important figure, looking historically at media in terms of where we are today and understanding why we are where we are today in terms of media, is Walter Lippmann. You know, and Walter Lippmann, a book you put out, Public Opinion, which is a book published mm-hmm. in 1922, you know, groundbreaking work in looking at media. And, you know, particularly, you know, if we look at Walter Lippmann, where he was writing in the 1920s in relation to where we are almost 100 years later, it's really instructive, you know, to see the evolution of media, because even where he's writing, there was no such thing as television, much less, you know, the internet. But he's talking about, you know, the evolution and the emergence of media and how media is able to adapt, and how corporate interests were even then co-opting media as a resource. And you know, they create this pseudo environment within which an all-encompassing perspective is contained. You know, and that's what's significant, is this pseudo environment, to use Lippmann's words. And it's so ironic, because he talks about how people living in this pseudo environment live in these shadows with their distortions and assumptions and biases. How this shadow world becomes reality, You know, and that's what I was trying to get at earlier, is that the media creates a certain reality for us, and it's a reality that is it's really a deadly reality for those of us who live in the real world, in terms of the values that it presents to us, in terms of the images of what's beautiful, what's desirable, are presented to us. I'll tell you what happened last night is a perfect example of the ideas of the ruling class being presented to the masses as the ideas, period. You know, I mean, you know, the State of the Union address, and then there was, like you said, there was, you know, one rebuttal, you know, from the other corporate business party, you know, and so that is the image, that's the reality of the political picture that's presented to us by corporate media. That's it. That's a very narrow, very rigid, and very unrealistic, honestly, portrait of reality that was presented last night. Yet and still, it's the dominant portrait of the socio-political reality in this country. And so that's why it's crucial, you know, for Your World News and Black Agenda Report and Vox Union and all these other independent and alternative left media venues to continue to be the dissident voices, and for our listeners, you know, we've got to continue to, you know, be able to deconstruct these realities and these narratives that are being presented to us through media. You know, Fox News might be, you know, they're an easy whipping boy. You know, they're easy to pick on. You know, and for a reason, you know, because they're such egregious offenders of reality, really. You know, but all, you know, anytime you turn on the television, you're going to see a version of Fox News. You know, there's different shades of propaganda, if you will. You know, the other channels, the other stations, they might not be as blatant about the frauds that they try to convey, but they all do the same. They present this picture of reality. Same thing with film, with movies, and we have to develop a critical filter through which to receive and then analyze, you know, these images and this misinformation that gets purveyed to us, you know, through the corporate media. And that's what's really important. And, you know, and your point about, you know, the historical development, you know, that's part of it. That's part of developing the critical analysis, is understanding the historical development of it, particularly with relation to independent Black media and its development, its evolution, and its current status. You know, and Black Agenda Report is one of the best examples of independent Black media, and you know, and obviously we'll continue to support Black Agenda Report, and I'm all with you in bestowing the honorary doctorate on Glenn Ford from Your World News University. So, you know, it's scholars like Glenn that we need to look to in the face of, you know, this onslaught of propaganda by corporate media.
Right, and I'm glad you brought up those folks, and for you hip hop heads out there, and which I am very much, I was referring to, which is a song we're probably gonna play at the towards the end of the show, was when I said false media, referring to a song that came off the Roots album. It was Rising Down, where they took that quote, false media, that was in said by Chuck D in Public Enemy, and you know, took that quote and basically used that as the lead for one of their songs, you know, titled False Media. So we'll probably play that, but yeah, it was Chuck D and Public Enemy, you know, saying false media, we don't need it, do we? So it's you know it you know I say that to kind of harken back to the point that you brought up with looking at hip hop musical artists, you know, MCs, rappers, those that perform, you know, rhythm and poetry as modern day griots, you know, handing down these telling the stories to the community, you know, from a grassroots perspective. And when we look at and why is it so important to support progressive left-leaning black independent media? Well, the reason is because we look at the history of this country. When it has come to like truly progressive movements, the majority of the time, those movements have come out of the black community. This is another piece of history. The majority of those movements have come out of the black community. Whether it was the civil rights movement, you know, established by the likes of Dr. King and SCLC, whether going back to the abolitionist movement, of course they'll you know give a lot of credence to white abolitionists and bless them for the work that they did. But these movements, you know, obviously came out of the black community because those most affected by slavery, affected by Jim Crow, were black and brown skinned folks, you know. And so, these things came, you know, strongly out because if it wasn't for the likes of Frederick Douglass, you know, what would have Abraham Lincoln done? And if it wasn't for Dr. King, what would Lyndon Baines Johnson have done? I mean, it was Frederick Douglass. It says, power concedes nothing without demand. You know, we must demand, make these demands and make them known and make them forceful. Not go and request them and we must demand them. And so I'm glad you brought up Bernays and Lippmann. And one of the lesser but giants, you know, actually his work, you know, actually precedes Bernays a little bit. It was Ivy Lee. You know, Ivy Lee was another one of those PR, you know, slash like media. I'm looking for the term. I don't want to necessarily say scholars, but I guess yes, scholars, but figureheads of the early 20th century and the work it did. And yeah, we definitely don't endorse the ideologies and the reasons why Bernays did what he did, or even Lippmann. I mean, Lippmann, for God's sake, referred to folks like you and I as the bewildered herd. You know, so it's not like these folks were actual allies or whatever. You know, they felt that the hoi polloi were ungovernable, that you couldn't leave the masses, the non-elite masses to their own devices when it came to politics and making decisions on behalf of the governance of the country itself. It had to be governed by the elites, and as Bernays often referred to the media and public relations as the invisible arm of the government. So it puts a lot of stuff in perspective, folks. And like we always say, if you want more information on any of this stuff, you know, you can email us at yourworldnews2010. That's yourworldnews2010@gmail.com. That's @gmail.com. And we'll send you a plethora of information regarding this, book lists on the media, whether it's any one of Bernays' books to Lippmann's book, to Ivy Lee's book, to obviously the work that Chomsky has done around the media control, Bob McChesney's book, The Problem with the Media, Ben Bernanke's book, The Media Monopoly. These are all books that situated nicely on my library, and they're great books, starting points that will give you a very, very deep understanding on the media and the role that the media and public relations has in terms of creating these needs and illusionary desires that control folks, especially around consumerism, and definitely control folks around politics, where we see that there's no limit to how much money goes into politics and political campaigns. And folks are already estimating that when Obama runs for re-election, he's going to be spending anywhere between $1.5 billion and $2 billion. I said it. $1.5 and $2 billion with a B, billion dollars. And without further ado, speaking of Obama and speaking of perspective on Obama and his policies that you're not going to get anywhere in the corporate media, this is Glenn Ford. I'm right on with this one. This last one was Bruce Dixon. This is Glenn Ford.
A petition is making the rounds in which hundreds of signatories have vowed to oppose President Obama as long as he supports war. It's the kind of message that Dr. Martin Luther King would have signed onto. We know that because that's precisely what Dr. King told President Lyndon Johnson in April of 1967, that he would oppose his president and one-time ally as long as Johnson continued to wage war in Vietnam. Many believe that's the reason Dr. King was assassinated exactly 1 year later. There are very few black names on the current anti-war petition, but not because black notables fear assassination if they oppose Obama's wars. It's because the narrow and selfish class that has come to dominate the political life of black America thinks it can do better for itself by collaborating with the war makers than by opposing them, believing themselves to be somehow wired into power through the Democratic Party and their corporate connections. These African-American misleaders are the political heirs to those blacks that derided Dr. King for taking his stand against Lyndon Johnson's war. They're the same opportunists that berated Dr. King for sacrificing what had been a close working political relationship with the most powerful man in the world on the issue of war. Dr. King's answer to them was that the war must be opposed, not only on moral grounds, but because it condemned the poor of the United States to remain in that condition by draining the government and society of all available resources, like some demonic, destructive suction tube. Dr. King was saying to the black leadership class of his day, it may serve your personal interests to collaborate with President Johnson and pro-war Democrats and thus remain in good standing with power, but you are harming the interests of the poor, of black people as a whole, and of all humanity. To be on the wrong side on the war, or to engage in endless dithering and delay in order to avoid confrontation with power on the issue of war, is to work against the fundamental interests of one's own people. Dr. King was forced by urgent necessity to break with President Johnson because war was against the interests of black America. Obama's multiple and expanding wars are no less antithetical to the interests of African Americans today. The demonic, destructive suction tube that feeds $1 trillion a year into Obama's wars strips black America of all hope of emerging from permanent depression. As long as such fantastic sums are expended on war, there is no escape from an economic race to the bottom that will mangle black society beyond recognition. The black misleadership class, fearful to protect their own tenuous political and corporate connections, give lip service to peace but refuse to confront the president that makes war. In thrall of power in a black face and hoping some of the benefits will accrue to themselves, they allow the baton of progressivism to pass from the hands of black America or fall to the ground. History will look on them with revulsion. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. Sign the anti-war petition at warisacrime.org.
Yeah, please, please go on and sign that petition. And Peter, I want to read this real quick because as we're talking, I want to read this from one of my favorite books on the media, and it's a very short book, just over 100 pages by Noam Chomsky called Media Control, and one of the folks that he discusses in there, another person that people should definitely, take out your pens and write down is Harold Laswell. And Harold Laswell, he's known as the founder of modern communications. I mean, he's known as like the founder of what we call communications today, especially within the within the context of American communications. It's always important to look into I'm not fans of the founding fathers, and I put that out there. That's no secrets. I'm not fans of the founding fathers because they advocated on the rights and properties and privileges on behalf of rich white men. But yet they're sold and they're fed to us on a steady diet of pure American propaganda from the day that we step into a classroom in this country to all throughout, tertiary education and throughout America, the founding fathers. And so after a while, people that have not even studied the founding fathers or anything like that and studied and what they were about and whose rights they're really for and what they owned, what kind of so-called property they own? Do they own human beings and so forth? I mean, for goodness sakes, I mean, within their own constitution, which later had to be ratified, they counted, black people as not even a complete human being. They're 3/5 of a human being, for political purposes. And so, anyways, it's important to read the works and to understand the work of men who have set up a system in which you live, even though you may not agree with them, and even if you were alive at the time that they were alive, you might have been, so-called, quote-unquote, their property. It's important to understand the inner workings, and so that's why, it's very important, to go on the web. All this stuff is on the web. You can go on the web and you can, read the not just like the Constitution, but read the precursor to the Constitution, the articles that were put out there to come into a defense for the Constitution, the 82 papers, eluding me right now, Peter, help me, the Federalist Papers, yes. Read them. I read all 82 of them. Read them, and as mundane as they might be, there are tidbits in there. Especially reading through James Madison's essays, you'll find some very, very interesting things. But let me get back to Harold Laswell. Harold Laswell, founder of modern field of communications. As well, and he also was a leading, just like Lippmann was, he was one of the leading political scientists of the day. This is what he said. He said that we should not succumb to dogmatic or democratic dogmatisms about men being the best judges of their own interests, because they're not. We're the best judges of their public interest. Therefore, just out of ordinary morality, we have to make sure that they do not have an opportunity to act on the basis of their misjudgments. And what is nowadays called, totalitarianism, what Chomsky was going to say, or a military state, it's easy to see that within that context. But that's very, very profound. It's going to say they're not. Because they're not. We're the best judges of public interests. They are just out of ordinary morality. we have to make sure that they don't have an opportunity to act on the basis of their misjudgments. I mean, that's really, really profound. And it's diabolical and duplicitous and all that stuff, but it's really, really profound in order for us to understand, understand the inner workings of communications and propaganda of the day, because it was propaganda, and as Peter mentioned, Peter, when you mentioned Ed Bernays, you know, father of modern day public relations, he was part of the Creel Commission. He was part of the commission that was charged with creating creating public consent towards the American engagement in World War One, one of the most ill-fated, stupid wars ever fought. World War One, over 10 million lives lost. The American public was not behind it initially, and didn't become engaged in World War One until about 1916. But Woodrow Wilson desperately wanted the Americans to engage themselves in that. Same with so we appointed everyone from Secretary of Department of War Lansing to civilians like Ed Bernays, and it was headed by George Creel, and out of that came one of the brainchilds of Bernays was the three word mindless slogan, support our troops. Support our troops came out of the Creel Commission. Support our troops, and then they assigned these propagandist men that were dropped all over the country by the thousands, and they were called 4 minute men, and they would go to everything from these elk lodges to they would go to these elk lodges to some of these other like community groups and so-called societies, and they would do these mini 4 or 5 minute presentations on why it was important for Americans to get behind the war and all that stuff, and it worked, and within months, Peter, within months, the U.S. Masses had gotten behind that war, and there it went. But that was pure mass propaganda. So it's not just on a commercial level where, three out of five doctors say, eating bacon with your breakfast is the start to a healthy day, which Bernays was responsible for as well. But it's also the political realm, Peter, where we see propaganda. So propaganda has infiltrated all aspects of American life, from the consumer level to the political level. And so the average American who does not get any kind of critical thinking skills or critical thinking like definition in the run of the mill regular public school, governmentally sanctioned educational center, what I like to call them, since they don't get that in elementary school or middle school or high school, they go out into the real world, or so-called real world in America, and they're Peter, they're just bombarded, bam, just like those old Batman TV shows, and Batman will throw a punch, and bam, pow, wham. So Peter, they're walking, and they're going through daily lives, and they're getting bam. You know what I'm saying? Pick up the newspaper, bam, hit in the face with just ad. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Buy this, buy that. You know what I'm saying? Buy that. Sit down. You sit down on the couch in the lounge at work. You know what I'm saying? Commercials, buy that. They're probably watching Murray Provich. You know what I'm saying? Buy that. You know what I'm saying? And then when they turn on the news and they get some more propaganda, but not from the consumer level, but from a governmental, Americanism, pro-Americanism, do what we say, big brother, I'm the minister, this is the ministry of truth, getting all this stuff, and the average American, Peter, it is literally, if they're not, their minds are not trained, Peter, they are overwhelmed, they are overwhelmed without even knowing it, and they come home after a long day and they sit down and turn the TV on, and most are not turning on Al Jazeera or RT or, you know, Russian TV, because it's buried in the high outskirts of their cable channel. So they're turning on the local news, or they're, if they do at all, but they might just turn on Jersey Shore or Atlanta Housewives and watch that. And they're just being hit in the face with propaganda. And it's in the music theater. So, you know, they put on their headphones and they listen to the local radio show. I mean, the hip-hop show in their area, whether it's 95.5, which is owned by Viacom. And so they hear the top 9 for 9 and, nine hip-hop songs that are all consumer-based. You know, buy this, buy that, Gucci this, diamonds in my D, diamonds in this, you know what I'm saying? And then what pays for those 9 songs in a row? What comes is a litany of ads selling you this, that, and the other. So, Peter, their minds are just smacked up and just battered, man. If it was a prize fight, the ref would have ended it a long, long time ago, because they were out on their feet, and literally Americans are out on their feet. They're standing there in their mind, and they are out on their feet without even knowing it, and being strung along by the strings of media propaganda and government propaganda that has purposely put them in a position where they are not thinking critically about issues that affect them on a day-to-day basis, and also geopolitical issues that take away vastly needed resources, such as war and the money that goes into war, taking away those resources that could go to much needed things like ensuring that there's going to be Social Security in the future. It's not going to be privatized. And also, as we've talked about so many times on this show, health care, everybody in, nobody out.
You know, the image that you just left us with, of the, you know, the old Superman and Spider-Man, and, you know, those the fist fights with you know, the power
Batman.
And the man. Yeah, I mean, you know, I crack up, you know, because I used to watch that stuff after school too. But, you know, what they were depicting, all right, you know, on a very serious note, what they were depicting, you know, with those cheesy graphics, was physical violence, right? Well, that reminds me, in the context of our conversation, of a Noam Chomsky quote, where he says, propaganda is to a democracy what the bludgeon is to totalitarianism, or what, you know, physical violence or the police state is to totalitarianism. You know, that's the role that propaganda plays in a so-called democracy like the United States, a non-totalitarian system where the police state and physical brutality keeps people in line. It's propaganda in our society that keeps people in line. It's that people are self-controlled after their minds are changed. I mean, changing somebody's mind is a much better way to control, changing the collective minds of a people, of a society, is a much more efficient and expedient way to control that people, you know, and that's what we are living in right now. That's the society that we're in right now, you know, not some historical reality or you know, someplace, you know, distant, far and away, or in a book by George Orwell, but it's the reality that we live in right now, and it's the purpose and the agenda of the corporate media. Every day of our lives that we are, like you said, bombarded with it, is for them to manufacture this consent, you know, as Chomsky says, or manufacture this control. You know, the propaganda is designed to make people stupid, make people ignorant, to make people passive and as obedient as possible, you know. And so, you know, not only is the just bombarded with nonsense and just constant entertainment, but along with, you know, misinformation and outright lies, you know, it makes for a very clever propaganda system. And the differences, you know, a compelling Syrian state or these other non-democratic countries that we learned about in school, you know, they had ministries of propaganda. You know, those were branches of the government. Oh, my God, how evil that is. You know, how anti-democratic that is. Well, you know,
they have them here.
in our system, you know, we choose to be beholden to these propaganda arms that, no, they're not run by the state. They're run by the corporations for the state. I mean, the corporations and the state are really one and the same. And we choose to participate in that system. That's what makes it so repulsive, you know, is that we willingly participate in our own delusions, you know. And you know, and speaking of what we learned at school, I mean, you know, some of the things that you mentioned, that, you know, in terms of common items that are learned in school, you know, what if we had learned those in a broader context and with a critical eye? Things like the three-fifths compromise, you know, that's in the Constitution, in terms of, you know, slave being three-fifths of a person. Oh, that's horrible, right? Well, why is it in there in the first place? You know, three-fifths of a person was a compromise because the Southern states, the Southern politicians, they wanted to be able to count their slaves in the census in order to garner more political power, right?
What?
And otherwise, Solomon, slaves would have been 0% of a human being. In other words, you know, it was politicized. You know, they weren't considered humans for their humanity. They were considered three-fifths of a human being, you know, for political advantage, you know, to the slaveocracy in the South. I mean, but we didn't learn that in school. We didn't learn that perspective of it in school. You know, how about the Creole Commission? I mean, did we learn about the Creole Commission? I mean, you know,
why was
the Creole Commission created?
Of course not.
Why was the Creole Commission created? I mean, what was its purpose? It was created by the Wilson administration for the express purpose of changing public opinion in favor of entering World War One, because Woodrow Wilson ran on a platform of not entering the war. You know, he, in fact, one of his campaign slogans was peace without victory. In other words, we can live in peace without having to win a war. You know, but all along he knew that he was going to enter the war. He was going to take the United States into the war because it was in the corporate interests of the United States to do that. But, you know, the Creole Commission, we don't understand that from a critical perspective. You know, and the fact is that, you know, like the Founding Fathers, you just mentioned again, and the misstatement from that knucklehead Michelle Bachmann that you referenced at the top of the show, you know, this whole concept of the Founding Fathers and that whole narrative that includes the Founding Fathers and of course the Constitution, you know, these things are revered as part of the narrative Americana. All right, so it's the narrative that is revered, not the reality. All right, it's the narrative, not the reality, that is so revered by the masses of Americans, and because the reality is very often different than the narrative. You know, the reality of the history of this nation is very ugly. It's filled with genocide, and it's filled with slavery, and it's filled with war, and it's filled with corruption. You know, so this narrative is created of patriotism and freedom and liberty and democracy, and it diverts enormously from the reality, from the historical reality. But it's the narrative that the media continues to purvey to us, you know. And so it's important to be able to make that distinction. And you mentioned critical thinking, and one of the important components of critical thinking is to be able to make be able to discern between facts and opinions, and be able to discern between truth and untruth, you know. And the narrative is largely comprised of untruths and fabrications and omissions. You know, a lot of this ugliness is just simply omitted. They just simply write out of history, and to the extent that we have, you know, people, so-called leaders, officials, quote saying things like the Founding Fathers worked diligently to eliminate slavery. I mean, this is flat out wrong. It's just flat out wrong. You know, and then, you know, and then, you know, the narrative of the presidents, you know, all the presidents are revered. You know, they're all demigods. They're all worship. And yet and still, you know, you mentioned Lyndon Baines Johnson and the opposition of Martin Luther King and to the wars that Johnson was prosecuting. You know, we don't learn about the conflict, you know, between the anti-war elements in society and how King was so opposed to the war. And I think Solomon, that plays a role in why today, you know, the beginning of the 21st century, why the you know, so much of the what Glenn calls the black misleadership class does not support or doesn't confront President Obama, doesn't take a stand the way Martin Luther King took a stand in opposition to these overseas imperialist misadventures. You know, it's a good thing, and I'm glad you continue to make those historical connections, because there's that continuity, there's that historical continuity that's important for us to understand in shaping the reality that the corporate media is trying to pervade to the American public, you know. And you know, the idea that that Laszlo, you know, stating that, you know, men aren't the best judges of you know, the public self interest, you know, but we are. I mean, that exposes a tremendous amount of the American ethos, you know. And the truth is that's not just an idea or a concept of some elitist, some scholar, some academician writing a book someplace. You can you look at what Henry Kissinger said about you know, people in South America when Allende was a democratically elected president, and what did Kissinger say? Yeah, what did Kissinger have to say? You know, he said, you know, basically, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't have the quote in front of me, but you know, he basically said that, you know, the people, they didn't vote in their best interest because they don't know what their best interests are. So, you know, we have to go in, you know, the U.S. government has to go in and put the right person in charge. And, you know, and so they put Augusto Pinochet in charge, you know, this murderous dictatorship in charge in place of a democratically elected president. You know, so what Laszlo said, you know, that was reflective of an aristocratic and elitist mentality that went all the way back to the founding of this country, and it continues to this day. You know, we hear those same sentiments rolling off the lips of Henry Kissinger, and that whole mentality continues today. Whether they say it or not in those explicit terms, that's what they're acting on when they fabricate this propaganda. And they formulate this corporate media, you know, and the message and the reality that they portray. That's the mentality and ethos behind, you know, the corporate media today.
Right. And I mean, even, and I'm glad you brought up, Chile with Salvador Allende, and the mass repression, because what came in that wave, and this is American history that, you know, this is, whether it happened, even though it happened in Chile, this is American history, because this was America's might, you know, through the CIA and through its government, you know, going into Chile, funding that, you know, Milton Friedman, you know, the Chicago Boys, you know, played a major role in that as well. But that's just like some subtext that, you know, folks will learn about it, you know, when they do the research on this, if they haven't, you know, I know our listeners are pretty sophisticated, so this is probably, you know, old news, but just to highlight that point, you know, that you bring up in terms of, you know, the connection to Pinochet, who was this brutal SOB, son of a bitch, you know what I'm saying, that was prompted by the U.S. and just, tortured and maimed and murdered thousands of Chileans who were dissenters, you know what I'm saying, or, you know, to him. But more importantly, that they were supporters of Allende. and, you know, and the likes of Miguel Enriquez, who people don't, you know, a lot of people don't know, but he was, you know, part of an even more radical leftist group in Chile, MIR, you know. And so, anyways, I mean, you know, when you mentioned Chile, what made me think about, what it made me think about was 1954 and going back to Bernays. Besides the fact that Bernays was a propagandist that was not propagandizing, you know, because, you know, propaganda is everywhere. What Peter and I are due from week to week, I mean, this is propaganda. There's factual propaganda, then there's infactual propaganda, you know, and what we try to do is we try to put out factual propaganda. We try to put out propaganda from a left perspective, but we also, we try to make sure that we put it into a historical context, based on history, not revisionist history, but actual history. And so when you look at Bernays, Bernays played a major role in 1954 because he was used by the U.S. government. He was used by the U.S. government, and he ran the public relations campaign for the United Food Company in 1954. Yeah. All right, United Food Company is what we today call Chiquita Banana. And, you know, we get the term Banana Republic. You know, where they did not want to see Jacobo Arbenz and his agrarian reform continue to be emboldened. They didn't want to see, you know, thousands of hectares of land being placed into the hands of Guatemalan peasants so that they could homestead and cultivate the land for themselves, for the community, and for the country, which was what Arbenz was doing. They did not want any of that. They want, you know, they being United Food Company in the U.S. wanted to make sure that that money was in the hands of a U.S. corporation, and therefore was going to make its way back into the U.S. economy, into the coffers of the elite. But Bernays is the guy that created the public relations campaign that completely was put out there to just scare the living shit out of Americans, out of, you know what I'm saying, you know, of Arbenz, you know, turn him into this like raving, you know, red communist. And first of all, like by all historical accounts, he was not a communist. And friggin', even if he was, what the, you know what I'm saying? I mean, shit, most Americans don't know what capitalism is, much less communism, you know. And you have all different kinds of brands of communism, and just like you have different brands of democracy. And I don't like the brand of democracy that we live under right now. I don't like who liked the brand of democracy that we lived under, you know, from 2008 to 2000. I mean, from 2000 to 2008. So it depends on what brand. You know what I'm saying? So there are different kinds of communism and socialism. And it depends on the leader, you know, just like there are different brands of democracy, where there are real egalitarian democracies, which is not what we found ourselves in, you know, between 2000 and 2008. And for all intents and purposes, we don't really find ourselves under that right now or even before 2000. But it was Bernays that created that public relations campaign to slander Arbenz and to just make him public enemy number one, and later on he was systematically assassinated, at the behest of the U.S. government and the CIA. But looking at last night, Peter, I just looking at a little piece of there are so many different things to touch on, and because of time we can't get into everything about the State of the Union. But we look at one of the things that Obama said, and this is very telling. He says, we are the American family. We believe that in a country where every race and faith and point of view can be found, we are still bound together as one people and share the common hopes and a common creed that the dreams of a little girl in Tucson are not so different than those of our own children, and that they all deserve the chance to be fulfilled. Now, the second half of that is great. I, you know, I say nothing wrong, but the first half of it is total bullshit because, you know, we're not in a country where the points of views of people of every race and faith can be found. We're simply not. If we were in a country where the points of views of people of every faith and race could be found, programs like this probably would not exist. There would be no need. I would have never, you know, said, you know what, you know, we need to come up with something, you know, called Your World News and something to counter, you know. And so, folks, when you get a chance, I mean, it was, you know, and maybe our next program, Peter, we're going to have to, like, really delve into and flesh through much of the, and I think that would be a great idea is for us to have a show around the text and the content of the State of the Union and give it from and break it down from a left perspective and what it means. Because, you know, throughout the corporate media, whether it's MSNBC or the other bunch of them, when they broke it down, they broke it down from the perspective of the ruling class, and they weren't speaking about the working class and the poor. And so, but since we were just talking about Peter, there's a little short clip that I want, since I Peter, I know you're a big fan of George Bush as am I, and I'm being facetious, obviously. But this song by the Cool is dedicated to George Bush.
Bush and Hussein together in bed, giving H-E-A-D head. Y'all motherfuckers heard what we said. Billions made and millions dead.
There we go.
Out of the fact that perspectives these perspectives and the stories coming from disenfranchised, oppressed inner city communities was born. This is that is the nature of underground hip hop music. And now you can find hip hop music all over the place, whether it's the repressed communities, you know, in Colombia that found themselves under the reign of Uribe, and now he's the president of Colombia now, but he actually used to serve as the minister of defense. It will come to me in a second, but you see the resistance music, the resistance nature of hip hop, you know, throughout the globe now. But in the U.S., if these communities were not being repressed or were not suppressed, you know, we wouldn't have songs like that, Peter. They came out of resistance, and they play such a crucial role. And even the term hip hop, underground hip hop, when you look at that, I mean, and you juxtapose that to the Underground Railroad. Now we know the Underground Railroad was not a system of railroad tracks going underground, you know, a mile underground. It was called underground because it was underneath the oppressive, hegemonic, you know, white supremacist society that was holding black people against their will in brutal shadow slavery that systematically took the lives of, you know, when it was all said and done, over 100 million Africans, right? So now we look at underground hip-hop music, all right? Well, it's not being played literally underneath, it's not being played underneath the earth, but the term comes because it's suppressed. It's suppressed by the corporate media. It's suppressed by the corporate media, all right? So the corporate media affects everything. It's not just the news. It affects consumerism. It affects music. And, you know, when we look at Lowry Mays, who is an old buddy of George Bush's, he's the president and CEO of Clear Channel Communications, the largest corporate giant in terms of ownership of radio stations in America, owning over 1,200 radio stations. He said, listen, he said when he testified in Congress, when he was called to testify in Congress, he said, in no uncertain, and this is not being paraphrased, this is an exactly how he said it. He said, we are not in the business of providing news and information. We're not in the business of providing well-researched music. We're simply in the business of selling our customers' products. And I tell you, many of his radio stations are considered urban AC radio stations that play hip-hop, R&B, and the other radio stations play tons of music. Yes, he has some stations that he owns that are talk, but that's very profound, given the fact that these licenses that are given to these corporate giants, whether it be radio or television, but just looking at radio, you're supposed to provide localism. You're supposed to provide news and information. What are you talking about? You're supposed to provide news and information. That's part of the deal, bub. That's part of the deal. But he said that with no uncertainty. This was in 2003. And, folks, his name is Lowry Mays, L-O-W-R-Y, Mays, M-A-Y-S, Lowry Mays. Okay, folks, president of Clear Channel Communications, old buddy of George Bush. And so you think that a dude that says that is going to make it possible, is going to make it possible in any shape, form, or fashion for that kind of revolutionary music to be played, whether it's hip-hop or other, you know, Rage Against the Machine or, you know what I'm saying, or you know, Acrobatics from The Perceptionists, or you know, Mos Def, you know, Katrina Clapp. Of course not. So that's you know, it's everywhere we look. It's everywhere we look. And yeah. So I don't know if you have any final thoughts before we go. For some reason, I see that we have a 2-hour show today. It comes to an end. Which was odd because I thought we had a 3-hour show. But well, that's one of America's unsolved mysteries. We'll figure that out later. I don't know if it's the apparatus that is preventing us, because you know, last 3 weeks in a row, we've had 3-hour shows that we had set up, folks. This is just interesting. We've had 3-hour shows set up the last 3 weeks in a row, and we had a 3-hour show set up today. We had a 3-hour show set up today. It was supposed to go from 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But for some reason, in the middle of the show, some reason, it reads on our switchboard that the show is to end promptly at 10 p.m. I don't know. Is it bullshit or not? Is it Ripley? I don't know. Anyway, Peter, you tell me.
Well, there's a couple things in there. You know, first of all, the tune by the coup, head of state, what Boots is rapping about, is spot on history, and again, I won't go back into that, but just reiterating a statement I made at the top of the show about, the role of conscientious or conscious hip hop, in terms of, critical political analysis and so forth, that's a great example of it. And there's no, it's no surprise that the likes of Lowry Mays don't want to play that kind of music. And his statement about, we're simply in the business of selling whatever his product is, that gets at the heart of what, media is about. Media is about, it's corporations, and corporations are capitalists, and they're about, they're making money. It's about making money. It's the bottom line. So it's not about educating and informing. It's not about critical analysis. It's not about raising, critical consciousness in the American public. It's about making money. That's the bottom line, and that's something that everybody who's a consumer of media, which is all of us, we need to be aware of that. That's the filter that we need to listen and to watch all forms of media through, and to read all forms of media through, is that these are money-making corporations who want to make money. That's their bottom line, the images and the ideas that we're being fed and bombarded with are simply part of their agenda to make money. And that we are being lied to. They'll lie to us. I mean, by any means necessary is how they'll make their money. They will, and they are lying to us. They're misrepresenting reality. They're fabricating all kinds of alternative realities to suit the corporate agenda, and to maintain that narrative, that dominant narrative that I talked about earlier, to go back to the line that you extracted from the misstatement of the union last night, where Obama said we're part of the American family. Obviously, you're right. It is. That's fraudulent. To make the claim that this society is just one big happy family. It's ironic that Barack Obama should have said that, because since his election, this nation is more divided, perhaps than any time since the Civil War. The election of a black president has facilitated the division in this country, unseen in over a century, that simply highlights the reality that no, this is not one big happy family. It's not even one big unhappy family. It's factions and groups and very divided, very very reticulated groups of people that just happen to have, that happen to populate the same continent, and so when he articulates, this big American family concept, that's just part of that narrative. He also talked about, he also said, let us speak with one voice, reaffirming that our nation is united in support of our troops and their families. Well, obviously that's wrong too, because there's a huge anti-war faction that's part of this so-called family, who don't support the wars, and I refuse to even call them our troops. They're not my troops. They're not doing anything for me. And he also talked about the American dream, and that's part of that propaganda. Just Obama referring to the American dream and putting that in the context, putting the whole reference to warfare in the context of the American dream and so forth. It just reinforces these fabricated ideas that are part of this dominant narrative of America, you know. And, you know, another thing he said, I call on our college campuses to open their doors to our military recruiters and to ROTC. I mean, what is that about, Solomon? What is that about? In the State of the Union, the president is openly calling for further militarization of our society, explicitly calling for college campuses to be the tools of military recruiting. You know, so we definitely need to come back and take a whole show or a significant part of a show to deconstruct the State of the Union, you know, because it is so important. It is so important. Whether folks, you know, if you didn't listen to it, I urge you to, you know, to go online and find a transcript of the Misstatement of the Union address and read through it for yourself. You know, read through it for yourself, and that way, when we do come back and discuss it, we can have a more informed dialogue about it. But you know, it's all part of that same narrative that is perpetuated by corporate media.
Right. In our opposition, let's make this clear, just in case we have some first time listeners that don't know where we're coming from. As we've stated throughout the show, we are extremely left-leaning, progressive, but very, very far left to the so-called aisle. We are, our opposition to, in a more perfect world, we wish we could support the first African-American president of the United States of America, but based on his politics, we are totally in opposition to his continuation of these regressive policies that were laid down by George W. Bush, and even before him, Clinton, and before him, you know, the other Bush and Reagan. We see a continuation of these policies. We see Obama recently this week genuflecting and giving praise to Ronald Reagan, the black community, you know, was nothing short of a devil. I mean, Ronald Reagan, I think of him in the same way as someone thinks of as a demon or a friggin' devil with a pitchfork. I mean, you know, not just for what he said surfacely about black people. He referred to black men as bucks. He said it on the campaign trail, referred to black men as bucks. Referred to black women. This is Ronald Reagan as welfare queens. But this damn corporate media that we've been tearing apart the last, you know, hour and a half or 2 hours, continues to prop up Reagan as if he was some kind of god, all right? And this is the man that referred to black women as welfare queens and had these policies that destroyed families and lives in Central America, all right? So you want to talk about immigration or like immigration? We have nowhere else to look but your own government. So our opposition to Barack Obama is not in the same vein as that white nationalist, white supremacist group called the Tea Party. It is from a very left-leaning progressive standpoint that we oppose him the same way Dr. King opposed Lyndon Baines Johnson. All right, we oppose the policies, we oppose the warlike policies, but Reagan was brutal. And what he did to Central America, what he did to Grenada in terms of, you know, because of his opposition to communism, was just repressive, and that caused a huge influx of immigration, people fleeing their homes throughout Central America to the U.S. to get away from these death squads that were funded by the U.S., by the likes of Reagan and then later Bush. So this is stuff that you just are not going to get on the corporate media. The corporate media will tell you, as Malcolm X once said, to paraphrase him, he said, if you don't watch yourself, the media, the newspapers will have you loving the oppressor and hating the oppressed. And that's exactly what happens. Love, you know, the likes of Ronald Reagan. We hate, you know, we hate the oppressed. We somehow have been programmed to hate, you know, Cuba and hate the revolution of Cuba that overthrew Batista and his dictatorial regime. you know, but, you know, the U.S. don't care because, you know, Batista, you know, was propping up U.S. corporations, allowing them to walk in there. But, folks, we have 30 seconds left. Unfortunately, we've come to an end. Our next show, you want to tune in, continue to tune in. Mark our show as a favorite. Get the updates for our show. Next week, we're going to have somebody, a journalist, that's going to come on and talk to us about the Palestinian papers, another thing that the U.S. corporate media is not talking about, the Palestinian papers. And that's about it. So for Peter Fowler and myself and for all the staff of Your World News, I'm Solo. As Peter says all the time, peace and unrest. We're out.